Welcome back, folks, to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have Dan Jenkins from Current Powered by GE. Greg, it was fun to have him on.
Yeah, had a great discussion on LED fixtures and having somebody knowledgeable from a company like Current Powered by GE is always beneficial to everybody, all of our audience and listeners and ourselves. We learned a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was fun to find out a lot about how they develop their products. The products themselves are always great to talk about, but the process by which a big company like that goes about product development, I found fascinating. So if you're into that kind of thing, folks, you'll like this episode. This episode of the show is sponsored by Current Powered by GE. Holy macaroni. Go to LED.com. That's LED.com for information about Current Powered by GE. And we thank them for their sponsorship of this program. And in some ways, I think that the GE name is back through Current Powered by GE, Greg.
I as well. I think they've really are a leader in this industry and something that we need more than ever. And it was great to have a discussion with them. They've been bridging the gap between the past and future of efficient lighting. Current has provided innovative energy-saving lighting solutions for more than 80 years. And today is maximizing the value of smart building management with Daintree Enterprise Solutions and Intel Technology. Visit LED.com to learn more about Current's digital solutions platform, as well as their new Type B double-ended LED tube offering.
Wow.
Check it out.
So go to LED.com, baby. And you know, hey, they invented the light bulb, so they know what they're doing. Of course, this episode and every episode of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast is sponsored by, or it actually is it sponsored? It's affiliated with, Greg, our association. That's the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, where all the lighting bad boys go to hang out, and bad girls or whatever you want to call it. We all go there to hang out, folks. So come on down. Check us out on NAILD.org. But for right now, Dan Jenkins from Current Powered by GE. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dan Jenkins.
Thank you for having me.
Say hi to Greg Garrick.
Greg, how are you today?
Good, Dan. Thanks for being here.
So, Greggy, I'm excited to have GE Lighting on. Why don't you start this one off?
Yeah, no. First of all, you know, what I love about GE is that they dive into issues in the industry better than any manufacturer I've seen. And I mean that, you know, not because you're on the show, but from my experience. What I like is you guys, if there's an issue to be had, you guys dive into it, you do white papers, you research it, and you do things the right way in lighting. So first of all, thank you for doing that. That's appreciated from my end and
thanks.
Others.
Here, here.
Definitely. Proud to be a longtime participant of the industry.
And there you go. Good. Well, what we wanted to talk specifically today about with you is where lighting is heading, or LED retrofits in general. And, you know, I kind of looked at it as all lighting retrofits have been this, is you can either do a bulb, you can do a retrofit kit, or you can do a fixture. And I thought back to when I first started, I was in the mid-2000s where you did T12 fluorescent to T8. The fixture part wasn't really part of the equation much, very minimal. Now it's part of it because we obviously know it's a whole new technology. But maybe the first question I want to find out, and I'm going to ask Mike, I'm going to do my opinion, and Dan, you get your opinion, is can you break down the percent of all LED lighting projects you see that are, and I'm talking existing lighting, so Dan, it might be hard for you to do from GE's perspective, but Mike and I, it's pretty easy. Mike, what percent is a bulb retrofit? What percent is a retrofit kit, and what percent is a fixture?
That's tough to do based without categories to that.
Okay.
You know?
As a whole.
Yeah, I would say as a whole. Well, let me ask you this. I mean,
I can do, how about I share mine and then you tell me.
I would say this. Yeah. It's gone up because of the increase in retrofits to all the high bay fluorescents I put up.
Okay.
Right? So because there's so many high bay fluorescents out there now, the actual bulb replacement thing for us is on high bay fluorescents, despite our last podcast on high bays, is really going strong.
Yeah. And then Dan, we'll give you the chance to talk because you're the guest, but I'm going to just share quick. I see bulbs is about 60%, retrofits about 25%, and fixtures at 15%, at least what I do. So that's why you're on here today to talk a little bit more. What do you guys see at GE? Where do you see the futures headed?
Sure. Well, we see it in different segments. So, Mike, I think you talked about high bay. From an indoor stand, that's one that's developing, right? The replacement bulb for the HID has really started to blossom here in the last year, I would say. So I think you'll see bulb replacements pick up in the high bay space. And there really aren't many kits in that space today. It's kind of new fixture or bulb. So that's kind of your no middle ground there. And again, it's been all new fixtures to this point for the most part, and now we're seeing the bulb replacements pick up in the high bay space.
Yeah, I feel hang on a second. I want to unpack that one a bit. That's a great point. There's a lot of pressure out there right now, price pressure and convenience pressure in that, to change out the metal halide to an LED bulb. Greg, are you quoting a lot of that?
Metal halide to an LED in a high bay?
Yeah.
We don't see metal halide high bays anymore. It's all fluorescent, at least in my market. You know, there aren't really any. Yeah, you know, I mean, I know, you know, I could probably count them on my hand how many people still have metal halide high bays in our market. It's not many.
Yeah, sure.
Outdoor, though, that's where we're seeing it. But
yeah, not as many exactly. For that. No, you're right. Outdoor probably a bit more prevalent because the T5 phenomenon didn't take over there. But we still do, as a business, sell a lot of metal halide bulbs, which are probably going outdoor and high bay. As we think about indoor, luckily GE has had the full offering from the start: bulbs, kits, new fixtures. And as a result, our bulb business, I would say it's probably on a fixture quantity basis, you're probably looking at five bulb replacements for every four fixtures for every one kit. The kits seem to be a lot less prevalent, but they're in the retrofit space. So, you know, some fixtures end up in new construction, and I can't delineate in our numbers between new construction and retrofit.
Yeah, no, I figured it'd be a hard question for you to define. But in terms of bulbs, now you guys have historically or were never doing the ballast bypass up until about a year ago. Can you explain kind of where your stance is on that now, why it's changed, where you think it should be in terms of the bulb only retrofit for LED?
Correct. We have inserted some additional safety measures that have allowed us to get comfortable with the bypass technology, or type B. And so you've seen us launch a HID replacement with a type B, as well as linear fluorescent with a type B. So it took some evolution of the safety, additional safety aspects, to allow us to get comfortable with the type B solutions.
So you guys lost millions in revenue because of that.
Some might say, or we protected our brand from potential future problems.
Yeah, okay. You could look at it two ways.
Now, the terminology, first of all, I got to credit GE with as well. You guys are the ones who came up with the type A, B, and C, and thanks for that as well. Because for years, or for when it first started, people had different names, direct bypass, you know, all unique names, but type A, B, and C help us define it. So are you guys, I know everybody's opinion is different, but where do you guys incline towards? Is it still type A and type C over type B? Or what do you feel as the right move?
I think it'll land in B and C. You know, a paired driver with a lamp to provide you with the optimal solution. And then for those that are looking for to take out the bypass, you'll end up with the type B. So B and C is where we think it will end up.
So are fluorescent ballasts just going to cease to exist? I mean, I know they'll be around, but I assume
I'd love to say that, but T12 still exists, unfortunately. You can find them around, but you'll see, obviously, increasing price because of decreasing volume.
I know your stance, and you're on the fixture side of things. So why would we, when we do so many bulbs right now and the price is there, why would we consider doing a retrofit kit or a fixture over the bulb? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. In the past, when you just changed tubes, you kept the same look. So now your infrastructure, you know, is aged potentially. If you're looking for your employees to see a difference. You can use a kit, which gives you a visual difference to your current lighting system, a new look, a fresher approach. And frankly, from a contractor standpoint, Greg, I suspect it has less opportunity for errors, tombstone problems, wiring problems. It's really you're hooking up, you know, power, and that's about it.
Right. And I kind of look at it, you know, with those three options, and I've said it before, but if you have a, if the fixture's in the correct location and it's good shape and it provides necessary output, then a bulb can be a good option. But if you need, if you need a new look, and it's in the correct location, then a retrofit kit makes sense. But if a fixture's in the wrong location, typically go fixture. I know all new construction is fixture, but in your opinion, is it the right way to retrofit a fixture, to upgrade a fixture, is to go with a brand new fixture that's purpose-built LED?
Yeah, I like your analysis there. If you have to move the fixture, you'll have the labor invested anyway. You would go new fixture. If you're not moving the fixture and you don't want to get up into the ceiling plenum and expose the ground to any of that, then a kit works well. From an efficiency standpoint of install and the features and benefits it gives you long term. If you're cost constrained and aren't worried about keeping the same look, then tube and driver is a great way to go.
Let me change gears here for a second, because originally we usually don't talk much about, we kind of get right into the subject, but I'm actually curious, in a big company like GE, what does a guy like you do every day? Like when you're, it's like, how do you relate to the lighting industry every day? Like, I know what Greg does every day. He knows what I do every day. A guy like Dan Jenkins at GE, huge company, so many people. What do you do every day?
Yeah, so I listen to the market, and the market could be distributors, contractors, or our agencies that represent our product. Mm-hmm. Understand the application needs that are out there, and then try to come up with a product that meets the features and benefits required at the price point it's required with the look. And I'm focused primarily on the industrial segment and mm-hmm. the indoor segment.
So when you receive that feedback, how does it come to you?
It comes to me in multiple ways, whether they be specifications that an engineer or architect is looking to drive into the marketplace, whether it be a contractor saying, hey, to make ROIs work, I really need to increase my install time by 20%. And sure. Then that will open up this segment of the market to me. How can you help me increase install time? Whether it be color quality is of massive importance, and we're looking for the best color quality at the best efficiency without making that sacrifice or trade-off we've had to make in the past. And then, you know, my role is to allocate our investment dollars towards the best product or solution that'll deliver the best return, sometimes short-term and sometimes the best return, you know, over an extended period of time, depending on what we're trying to do.
So let me ask you this. After you get off this podcast right here, are you going to take a call from a take a call from a contractor? He's going to say, "You know what, Dan, I'm really looking for something like, I can't imagine that. I suppose that you're dealing with a lot of data, or how are you actually receiving the feedback, or how are you getting mm-hmm. the information?"
Yeah, so we collect that data from all those sources. We have custom fixture product request sources where our sales team can say, hey, Dan, we don't have this feature in our portfolio. Would you make a new fixture that had that feature if we were able to deliver this much volume, you know, at this price point? So we collect that, and a lot of times we have to say no to those. But when you get them one at a time, you know, you say no to one, but after you've gotten it, I don't know, 20 times over 100 requests, now you're starting to be able to aggregate and say, hey, this is a feature that the market's looking for. It's at a price point we can deliver it at that'll make the market activate.
And when you're making those decisions, so that stuff's coming across Dan Jenkins's desk. It's, you know, what I need is the connector on the end of the cord. And the end of the cord to be stripped with a two screw connector on it, so I can just slam it into the box and wire it up or whatever. You've seen this request, and you're looking at it. How Are you making a gut call on it based on the feeling you have, the number of requests you have, how many of your, like, how do you make those calls? How does GE make those decisions?
Yeah, there's some art to it, Michael. It's not all science. It's right. Art, and there's always science as to how much it costs versus how much you can get. But the volume that could be delivered a lot of times has a little art to it.
Okay. That's interesting. That's an interesting job.
I've made bad investments, Michael. I'm not afraid to say it.
Sure,
I've absolutely bet on stuff that hasn't worked out, no doubt.
You know, it's funny because you're kind of like the entrepreneurial arm of GE in a way.
Yeah, we've had to build an indoor portfolio from nothing. So yeah. We had no indoor fixtures 5 years ago, and we said, hey, we're going to start here. We're going to build a family. From that family, we're going to move from that application to this other application. And so we've gradually, over 5 years, made planned investments to build a portfolio that now allows us to do the majority of a lighting schedule for a new construction facility. And then we've since now expanded into the refit products that we're talking about here to have the retrofit ability for indoor, especially as the value proposition became appropriate. I'd say 5 years ago, indoor was a tough putt to make LEDs work. Since then, lumens per watt have greatly increased and cost has come down and such. Now indoor has activated, and as a result, we have the kits and the tubes, which we've always had, and the new fixtures to provide customers with whatever it is best meets their needs. And that's what I love about our portfolio, is we don't have to shoehorn someone into it's whatever's best for you, Mr. Customer. I really don't care if you buy a tube solution, a refit kit solution, or a new fixture solution. It's whatever meets your needs. It allows us to be a little more of a trusted advisor.
It's interesting because that's like product agnosticism within General Electric.
Sort of. I have a lamp counterpart who I constantly fight against for dollars internally to justify, hey, we're going to spend more on refit kits versus tube. So to the market, we're agnostic. Inside of GE, him and I go at it a little bit.
You know what's interesting too? I'm just on a kind of – like it's so curious to me how – so you're looking at how difficult it is for us companies. You know, I'm a distributor. I'm in front of the customer. You have GE, who's in that traditional lighting paradigm. You know, GE manufacturers, sells to distributors and agents, and then it goes out to the public, to contractors and all this. And it's interesting to see GE get a grip, get a grip on the business, because all of their infrastructure within the company would have been dedicated to the knowledge and distribution of legacy light sources. And to turn that in such a huge company with such deep roots is very difficult to do, actually, I bet.
Yeah, it was challenging. And in the end, we actually split into two companies. Current powered by GE is the LED professional portion, focused on the LED products and the professional segment of the market. And historical GE Lighting is focused on the consumer edge of the market, and maybe a little bit more, I don't want to say more of the legacy technologies, but the consumer edge of the market. So it ended up splitting us into two.
How do you guys stay agile? Like, what is it? Like, you could just get locked into such a corporate model that yet to move something in another direction. How do you implement, I guess a better question is not GE, how do you implement agility into your job and speed and balance that? Like, what is it that you do every day to not make too hasty a decision or whatever?
Yeah, I say we're agile as we change investments regularly. What I plan to do in September of last year, when I tell the business, hey, we're going to grow by this much and I'm going to invest here, come February, we've already reorganized the deck and are doing maybe some different things, some new things, and have delayed some others. So it used to be a process with the traditional fixtures once a year. We would go get funding, decide what programs we're going to do, and then take the next year to finish those. From an LED standpoint, it's not a monthly process, but it's definitely quarterly as we reshuffle the deck based on how quick the market is changing. For instance, the tariffs that are coming up here potentially 3-1, there are some programs that we would fund to do things to minimize that impact in the market if those tariffs are impacted, but if they happen. But I'm not going to go do them today because I'm not positive those tariffs are going to happen. And instead, I'm pursuing other things that I think are more important today. So yeah, it's the market has evolved drastically from when we were just a light bulb company, and speed is the key.
Very good. Now I need to dive back into how I can sell more lights. So let's get into that some more. So do fixtures in general last longer than bulbs?
Metal? Sure. But the ratings are real similar between tubes and fixtures. Fixtures are rated a little bit longer, but they're getting pretty similar these days.
How do you guys go around making the warranty decision? Like when you look at it, so you know GE's historical company, Century in the game, all this kind of stuff. When you guys say a warranty, you got to mean it, right? It's a different kind of situation, or you have to know what it means. Is another way to put it. Why the 5-year warranty? Why not the 10-year warranty?
I'm sorry, Greg, did you say why not 10?
Yeah, why not 10? Yeah. So why the 5-year warranty? Why not the 10-year warranty?
Yeah, we are very comfortable with the data that we've developed over years of being in the legacy ballast business and now in the driver business, that we feel like we pretty well understand the failure modes of drivers and when they will fail. So we don't have to put stipulations on the warranty about life, hours of operation, and things like that. Anytime you get out beyond 5, then you start to get into a lot of the stipulations that would need to be put on a warranty for us to get comfortable that we won't be damaging the customer's operation and or our reputation should that product not live up to the warranty that the customer's looking for.
So one of the biggest issues I have with fixtures is replaceable components. Is there anything you guys are doing to make it so you can replace them easily down the road?
Yeah, I would say we started real early in the industry with one of our first downlights had a replaceable module. But we couldn't get the market to think about 10 years down the road 5 years ago. And so, unfortunately, it wasn't as popular, wasn't as great of a selling feature as we thought it was going to be. And so we kind of pulled away a little bit from replaceable components for a period of time. Now we're starting to see people start to take more of a longer term perspective of this and want more of a replaceable component aspect. And so some of our suspended fixtures now have replaceable light engines as part of it. A couple of our recessed have obviously the ability to get to the driver from below the ceiling, but some replaceability as it relates to light engines. So it feels like there's a upswing back in the industry as it relates to replaceability of light engines in new fixtures.
I know when that started, that trend.
When was that?
When we released our podcast on biases in the lighting industry.
Like 2 weeks ago, man.
Yeah.
That accelerated it, Mike. Yeah. Greg, that accelerated it.
You know, it's funny because like there was a point at which like in this industry, everybody went into vertigo and thought everything was going to last forever.
Yeah.
And it was just pervaded the whole industry. And, you know, people are like, yeah, 10-year warranty. What do you mean? It's going to last 1,000 years. You know,
yeah.
It was like people got nuts. So that's good that GE is turning back into that, turning back towards. Are you guys Jaga compliant with your fixtures?
Yes, with those that have replaceable light engines. So our downlights, for instance, have a Zaga connection.
Okay, cool.
Now, how about your troffers or your 2x4 fixtures? Are those replaceable components within them? Or do they have replaceable?
Mostly the drivers. Replacing the LED strips becomes a challenge. So just drivers in those situations.
So why not do a type C tube with an external driver in a fixture that's designed to look LED? You can do the same thing, can't you?
Sure. And there are companies in the industry that have new fixtures with tubes in them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We had those in our portfolio. They didn't do very well, and this was probably up years ago. That might be something we look to bring back as the replaceability trend continues or grows.
I understand it can't be as compact, but to me, something like that, it, at least the LED strip, if it could be taken out of a socket instead of, you know, right now it's soldered in or screwed in and hardwired in. If you had some interconnectability or like a socket, and then you have the external driver, now you can replace all the components and you can still get a nice updated look. So I don't know if that could ever work.
I think over time, the market will demand that, and people will start to develop parts and pieces that can replace stuff that's in fixtures today.
You know, it's funny, Dan, that you bring that up, and this kind of comes up with a bunch of light bulb dorks that have been in the business for a long time. You know, it's like there's been like a realistic dawn now. The sun has risen on realism in the lighting business. And it's like, you know what? Gosh, wouldn't it be great if I could just change that part of a fixture as opposed to taking out the whole fixture again and redoing all of them because now they look different? There's like a and the other thing was that when we were talking to the D Dentum, what was his name? D, what was the guy from Jaga, Greg? D Dentina?
Something like that.
I don't know his last name. Dutch name. Can't remember. But anyway, D, we love you. I know that's your first name. But it's interesting because when we were discussing it with him, it kind of turned out, like when you think about it, that all the innovation in the lighting business was really accelerated by the fact that the legacy technology had set the form factors for innovation. Yep. Right? So it's like, what you need to do, son, is you need to get, 2,200 lumens out of this 4-foot shape with a bi-pin base and run it on a ballast. If you can make that, man, boom, I'm going to sell millions of those, right? And that's that dedicated form factor, the limiting of the space in which the innovation could take place was absolutely critical to the innovation itself.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. We when we started in the LED business, we had no indoor fixtures. So we were hopeful that, form factor would change and allow us to have a competitive advantage because we didn't have equipment that had to make it in 2x2 and 2x4 and could make it in any shape possible. But that has proven you're stuck with that form factor. And so, you're exactly right.
So, basically, in a city like Toronto, where there's just such a very big expatriate Chinese community, so there's literally thousands of importing lights from China, fixtures and everything. And what you're going to have is like hundreds and hundreds of custom-made light fixtures, basically, that have no replaceable parts at all.
Yeah, that. It's going to be an industry challenge, that's for sure. I think though decorative lighting has always existed. Hmm. Maybe that has expanded as a result of LED and all these different potential form factors. So more decorative is going in. That will be a challenge in the future when it expires.
Yeah, I mean, so you guys are active in that, Jaga. Do you feel there's going to be traction to a point where everyone is going to have similar form factors in their LED fixtures?
I'm not sure to be honest with you. Like I said, I'm hoping it's not a trend that goes back away. It was we thought it'd be popular, it wasn't. It's come back. We'll see how it maintains because there is a big push in the marketplace for lower cost fixtures. And with lower costs, you end up losing features and benefits, and replaceability is going to be one of them.
Oh, man, the pressure is on.
Yeah. If you're looking for cheaper fixtures, it's going to lose the replaceability element of it.
So let me ask you this. In the past, okay, when I was in this business and I entered lighting in 1999, okay. Mm. Which doesn't seem that long ago, but it's actually a long time ago now. So I've been 20 years in the game, right? So
about this.
You had a CFL. CFL would come out, say a triple twin tube or a double twin tube. And everybody had to make it. Like, did you guys at GE Phillips in Sylvania sit around and say, these are the rules of making a tube? And if not,
no,
where are
no
those
sitting
people?
Around with competitors, let's be clear. No,
well, where are the people that said, where are the people that said, all tubes have to be 4 feet, this T12 in diameter, this color temperature, and then you guys fight it out on the back end? Where is that the, where are those, who determined those form factors originally in this business, and how come they're all dead now? Where are those guys?
I'm not sure where they are, but they did a great job of making an industry with standards, let's say. And interchangeability, interoperability, and LED has kind of flipped the table on that initially. Maybe we'll start to see that come back.
Well, you know, there's only one company that I think could lead that charge. Let me think who it is. I think they invented the light bulb and were founded by Thomas Edison. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Oh, man. So, Dan, any final comments for our listeners out there from GE?
I think this is a great time to be in the lighting industry. I mean, it can be difficult from day to day, but we are actually solving problems and making a difference in the world, which is a big deal from an energy standpoint. So, you know, look to GE to be a trusted advisor for you as you're considering your different projects. As to the guy's points earlier, we're technology agnostic as it relates to the LED form factor. So appreciate the time, appreciate your podcast, and look forward to seeing more of your education in the future.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Current powered by GE. Go to LED.com, Greg.
You got to check it out. Current powered by GE is a company I've always respected. First of all, GE has my initials, Greg Eric, GE, General Electric. So we like that. But in addition, they're a company that always takes leadership in this industry, and we need that today. They come out and they dive into any issues that are out there. If I ever have questions about something I don't know or our podcast doesn't figure it out, I go to GE often. I go to their experts and figure it out. They have excellent white papers talking about it. They're the ones who invented the terminology type A, B, and C for LED tubes that everybody's followed. They've also dove into any other issue that you find in lighting. And when they do something, they do it right. That's what I like about them. They go into the products, find what somebody might be missing or might not be doing right, and they improve on it and make it better and do everything right. So in today's lighting world, we need companies like Current powered by GE more than ever. And I'm glad we got to talk to him today.
Yeah, Dan Jenkins was fun to have on the show. Dan, thank you for coming on. And we have someone, a little guest in the studio today with me here. We got my daughter, Ella Colligan, who's on March break, or as you guys say in the U.S., spring break. Say hi to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast crowd right there.
Hi.
Oh, she's really in a good mood. So Ella's here with me in the studio, and we'd like to thank all of our families that support us every day. Ella Grace, thank you. And all of our listeners, sponsors, vendors, National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, folks, go to naild.org for information on joining us. And of course, Greg, Dan Jenkins, thanks for coming on the show, man. It was really fun to have you on, and look forward to more people from Current powered by GE. Go to led.com.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you.